This next set of work that I'd like to talk about is more work that we did with my PhD project at NC State. And this is looking at the influence of nutrient accumulation in chrysanthemum moribundum on root substrate pH over time. So again, just a quick review in case you walked in, but my PhD work was looking at the factors that influence substrate pH, and primarily we focused on the physiological fertilizer effect and chemical fertilizer effect. The physiological fertilizer effect is really where the plants are taking up nutrients, and that is potentially changing the substrate pH. The chemical fertilizer effect is fertilizers are just inherently acidic solutions, and what's the impact that you're having from those? Some of the questions that we addressed in this work were questions that came up whenever I did this first paper on trying to develop a model for describing how macronutrients impacted substrate pH over time. We grew a model crop, Salvia farinacea, and basically observed how these different nutrients influence substrate pH over time. And so from this, we had some questions that we wanted to address. And I'm not going to go more into the background because I just went into the background in the previous talk, but some of the questions that we wanted to address were, what is the correlation between nutrient uptake and substrate pH change, okay? This is not something we do with salvia, not necessarily, you know, just omitting it, but the first paper that we worked on was like trying to develop the protocol and the methodology for doing this, and then after we did that, we were like, okay, we can begin to address some of these other questions. And so basically we're looking at, you know, how does correlation between uptake of some of these nutrients correlate with substrate pH changes? We also asked the question, okay, with this model, what happens when we grow a species that's different from salvia, which is the one that we grew in the previous paper we worked on? Another question we asked is, okay, well, what happens if we have a crop that grows for a longer period of time than the salvia that we grew? And then, as you'll see in just a second, we also observed this interesting phenomenon where phosphate is a negatively charged ion, and you would think, based on some of the work that we've done and other work others have done, is that as you increase the amount of phosphate you apply, you should see an increase in substrate pH. But actually, we kind of saw this inverted curve, and so something that this tailwind was causing substrate pH to drop, and we were able to answer this with this work that we were doing. So our objectives in this experiment were to evaluate the relationship between trends in nutrient uptake and also changes in substrate pH. And we wanted to look at what is the species effect in developing this new model, and then also look at a longer growing model crop, and we chose chrysanthemum for this. We used the central composite design, like I just talked about, to determine our 30 treatments for this experiment. We used a 3-peat, 1-perlite substrate again. Our starting pH was, again, approximately 5.7, 5.8. And for this experiment, we used chrysanthemum moribundum Pittsburgh purple. We got cuttings in, stuck in our cells, and got them to root. In this experiment, we used 4 reps for each treatment. And then we also had collected data on sheep nutrient accumulation. So this is what our crop looked like in full bloom. This was at the second harvest. We had 2 harvest dates on this, and so when we got ready to harvest the crops, we brought them into the head house. We cut the shoot growth off, and then we saved the substrate to evaluate it for pH. And again, we just measured the pH with a pH probe. At this point, we harvested plants after 35 and 65 days after installing them. With the salvia, we only grew it for a total of 45 days. And so this has given us about another 3 weeks in production for the chrysanthemum. Here are our results that we got from which terms are significant. Again, another big player in this is that we have been able to include a day term. And so, this is beneficial over the PURE method because now we can show how substrate pH changes over time. The other thing to point out, too, is that for the main effects, we had nitrogen carrier ratio, phosphorus, potassium, and also sulfur were important main effects. But you can see that out of that again, it's like 99% of the nitrogen carrier ratio here is driving this main effect that you see, and phosphorus, potassium, and sulfur are only playing like a little bit of a 2% in that total 88.6 R squared. And we have some other squared terms in there as well, too, as well as interaction terms as well. But however, these are not very significant in this R squared, and so therefore I'm not going to talk and go into them a lot today. So for nitrogen, what we see is that, and Matt, this may help answer your question a little bit, as we increase the amount of ammonium in the fertilizers, what we see is that substrate pH drops very significantly. We see that, remember, our starting pH was around 5.7, 5.8. And so what we see is that after 65 days, plants that receive all their nitrogen in the form of nitrate, you have them increasing the substrate pH up to about 6.25, somewhere in there. And then as you increase the amount of ammonia, what you see is that substrate pH is dropping down to about 4.25. And so over the course of 65 days in this experiment, we see pH ranges for both ends of the spectrum within about a 2.0 range for that. With nitrogen, we were not able to investigate how nutrient uptake influenced substrate pH because we didn't use labeled nitrogen. So this is one of the ones that we were not able to evaluate that for. For phosphorus, what we see is, and this is the inverted parabola curve that you kind of see here. What you see is that as we increase the amount of phosphorus, which is one of the significant terms for the manifests, you see that as you increase the amount of phosphate in the fertilizers, you see that initially the substrate pH rises. And this is what we would expect it to do because, again, phosphate is a negatively charged ion. As the plants are taking it up, they have to somehow maintain that negative charge on the membrane, and so therefore they expel a hydroxide or take a proton in with them. However, what we did not expect, and this is the exact same thing that we saw in the salvia work that we did, is that you begin to have this sort of dovetail where it begins to decrease and go back downward as you're applying more and more phosphorus. And when we look at sheet nutrient accumulation, what you see is that as you're applying more phosphorus, you're seeing more increase in the amount of phosphorus that the plant is taking up. So there's something else going on here, and we'll talk about that in just a second. For potassium, what we saw is that, again, it is another driver of substrate pH. Remember, nitrogen was about 2.0 units, but however, here you've only got a change of about, 0.2 units or so with this change. And so it is having an impact, and if you're trying to build a model that will predict how substrate pH changes over time in a crop, it's important to include it, but again, it's just not as important as nitrogen. And what we saw is that an increase in the amount of potassium decreased in substrate pH also correlated with an increase in the amount of potassium that we're seeing taken up by the plants. And so substrate pH is dropping, the amount of potassium the plant is taken up is increasing, so these two do correlate with each other. For calcium magnesium, this paired ratio that we did, we see that as calcium magnesium with chrysanthemum, as we increase the amount we're applying, we do see substrate pH drop. And whenever we looked at sheet nutrient accumulation for both of them, we saw that yes, as you're increasing the amount of calcium you're applying, the amount of calcium the plants are taking up is increasing. And then also you see the amount of magnesium that you're applying, the amount the plants are taking up is increasing as well too. Sulfur had a minor part in this model as well. The change over time was only about 0.1, 0.2 pH units. And unfortunately, with the data collection that we had with tissue analysis, we weren't able to get enough of the good sulfur, so we weren't able to generate tissue analysis data for this one as well. So in conclusion, what we saw is that generally uptake trends are correlating with changes in substrate pH for potassium, calcium, magnesium, and a little bit with phosphorus as well too. With pH, you can kind of predict a lot of it based on looking at just the nitrogen carrier ratio and also time. This gives you a significant portion of the total R squared. Of course, the other terms are important to consider, but these two here are the big ones that really help drive it. When we look at back at the past work that we did with our other model crop, salvia, we had an R squared of about 86.7. Mum, we had a slightly stronger R squared of 98.1%. And when we compare salvia pH at 45 days, this is the second harvest that we had from the first experiment, we see that the pH range was 6.01 to 4.95. With chrysanthemum at the first harvest of 35 days, we see that already that range is much, much greater than it was with the salvia. And so even though this is our first harvest on this crop, we are still seeing a stronger influence on substrate pH based on nutrient uptake. And so this just further confirms that, yes, there is a species effect that exists here. And if you're trying to develop models to predict this, you really kind of have to do it based on the different crops that you're working on. So we were able to address a lot of the questions that we had when we started this work about correlation between uptake and substrate pH changes. What about a species different than salvia? And also longer crop duration. But one thing that we couldn't figure out until we did this experiment was, what's up with this P-curve effect? Like, why do we see this curve effect instead of just like an increase with phosphate whenever we apply it? One thing that was really interesting about this work is that when you do the central composite design and you collect a lot of pH data and sheet nutrient accumulation data, you can begin to compare these and see how they correlate with each other. And so what we did is we plotted how does calcium uptake change in the plant as you are increasing the amount of phosphorus that you're applying. And what we saw is that the amount of calcium uptake in the plant actually kind of does this dovetailing again too, where it begins to increase and then it begins to drop off as you reach higher and higher levels of phosphate. So what in the world could potentially be going on here? Well, in talking to our soil chemist on my committee, he had the theory that it was potentially the formation of hydroxyapatite that was beginning to produce some of these protons here. That we are applying phosphate, and so therefore that is driving this reaction to the right, and you are actually forming hydroxyapatite in this soil media. And of course, when you form hydroxyapatite, you produce protons. This is an acidic reaction. Another thing too is that if you think about it, if you're applying phosphorus, you're also potentially consuming calcium as this reaction is occurring. And so therefore, the plant has less calcium in the substrate to take up, potentially. And so therefore, this is one of the theories that we had as far as why we are observing this effect. So kind of fascinating, you know, you go to dive in to check out one effect, and you come up with these three or four different things that are interactions that you never expected. So again, acknowledgments with the student help and people at CSU that were instrumental and also funding materials and the faculty, any questions you might have? Yes, sir.
I just wondering, why did you make this subsidy for the ratio of Peter Merlite versus 1?
Oh, why did we make the substrate 3-to-1 perlite? What we were trying to do is mimic what a lot of growers use in contemporary mixes out there for floriculture crops. Pierre, his method that he used in the 1930s, his methods were based solely on agricultural soils. And of course, soils are a lot different to grow in than just like a peat perlite mixture.
That's
so,
an issue.
3-to-1? Yes, and we use in Pierre's work, or I think he used the Cecil soils, from what I understand from the work that I did and the research. So I mean, he could have, but from what I understand, he did go back and use he based his measurements and stuff on soil, and that was one of the problems with his experiments, because they are hard to extrapolate to, you know, floriculture growing mediums. So I'll have to go back and check on that. Yes, sir.
What sources of NPK do you use in this
and
the previous experiment?
Sure. The question was, what sources of NPK do we use? We used a lot of different stock solutions for those. So we had a list of about 20 different salts that we used. So I'm trying to remember right off the top of my head, but we used ammonium chloride, et cetera. If you want to, I can call up the list later in my PhD and show you the list.
Yeah, I'm just curious, there's associated ions going on in all of that work as well. That, you know,
right, and that was in our initial review of the first paper, that was something that someone else quoted, and they were discussing, they were saying that one problem we had was sodium chloride. Like, you put in all these salts from these different fertilizers, how is sodium and chloride having? And what we did is we did some rough calculations and kind of showed that the levels of sodium chloride would be like below toxic levels. So yes, you're right, those effects could potentially exist. And But overall, I think that the fact that the model exists and it's pretty robust, it shows that those were probably minor effects. So yes, those could potentially impact it. Okay. Yes, can we hold questions? Because I'll be more than happy to get you next time. Okay?